Picture this, a recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary White House Experience. Yes, yes. Stop clapping. Hello, good evening, welcome. Sorry, I only just managed myself to get here in time. I was offered a lift by Derek Hatton.
And now the stupid experience.
Everything in this country is tailored for the stupid classes. Take one example, greeting cards. It is completely impossible to buy a greeting card for any occasion which does not assume that the buyer is a stupid bastard prat. Any occasion at all.
And lastly, as an appropriate tribute to the deceased, the former head of Hallmark Cards, I'd like to read some of the cards received by the bereaved wife since his passing away. From her cousin Jennifer, a card which on the front has printed, "Deepest regrets." And then on the inside, "I'm sure you'd have preferred a different kind of stiffy." Exclamation mark. Exclamation mark. Then one from brother-in-law Michael, which has a hole on the front through which one can apparently see a nipple. But when you open it up, it's actually one of the dots on RIP.
And also, incidentally, nothing says, "This is not funny," like an exclamation mark. And sometimes they'll just be added to things that are not even remotely funny, like on the chart show, right? The information that comes up about Halo James or Wet 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 or whatever will always have an exclamation mark. Why? Is one supposed to read these things shouted? It's as if the copy was written by Ian Paisley.
"Apparently when the boys are on tour, Marty misses his cat Zelda so much that he even once wrote a letter to her."
There are certain crucial things which distinguish the vocabulary of the stupid. Firstly, they will react in a very particular way to the use of a word outside their vocabulary. If, for example, you use a long word to a mechanic like car or countersign, what he will do to demonstrate his alienation is repeat the word over and over again.
"Oh, countersign, is it? I'm countersigning now, am I? I will... Seems I'm a countersigner now. I shall have to get a separate office now to do all my countersigning."
"Oh, come on, it's not that obscure a word."
"Obscure? Obscure, are we? I will. Seems we ought to call ourselves Obscure Motors now."
Look, could you just do it?
"Oh, it, is it? Oh, Mr. Lardy Doll, it, is it? I will, soon as we've got His Royal Highness the Duke of It here."
"Oh, for goodness sake, here's £500.
Ah, my most inestimable thanks."
The hallmark of real stupidity, though, is the spouting of completely received opinions under the mistaken belief that you arrived at them yourself. This can always be spotted when stupid people preface an opinion with the words, "Oh, but what they don't tell you," a phrase which actually means, "What Woodrow Wyatt has told me." Woodrow Wyatt, by the way, the voice of reason. There are perhaps three phrases which mark out the person saying them as ultimately stupid. Number one.
"In the 70s, we were cap in hand to the IMF.
Number two.
I am a giraffe.
And number three.
Eddie.
Which brings us to a crucial point. Trotskyists contend that a constant diet of television like Little and Large has conditioned the working class into poor value judgments. But honestly, how low does your IQ have to be to accept that sort of conditioning? Plankton would write letters of complaint about Little and Large. The Trotskyist argument would only stand if programmes like Little and Large are, unknown to the viewer, accompanied by thought-conditioning blipverts.
"I'm a Johnny, I am. Like a virgin, touch for the 84th time."
"That was a funny joke. That was good."
"Eddie." "Eddie."
"This is not a pathetic subhuman."
"Here's Sid, supersonic."
"That is an affectionately incongruous nickname. You like it."
"Why don't we introduce our star guests, the Brian Rogers Connection?"
"The dancers are not rubbish. The dancers are not rubbish."
"Eddie."
Or I know, our special guest comedian, Les Dennis.
Oh, sorry, I give up.
Why do they laugh? Although, to be fair, the studio audience, for little and large, is entirely made up of old people, for most of whom the joke is basically, ha-ha, I'm not dead yet. This is why TV producers always get in old people to be the audience at crap shows, because if you stay in all day and never see anybody, then I suppose going for gold is a magnificent theatrical experience. I mean, most old people think the woman who comes around with Meals on Wheels is Liza Minnelli.
Also, the Trotskyist argument implies that were it not for the likes of Little and Large, then there would be a revolution. If only the Tsars had thought of that in 1917.
Let Comrade Lenin speak!
Comrades, we are at the Winter Palace now! We storm the barricades!
Hooray for Lenin! Death to the Tsar!
But wait! There, on the Tsar's private balcony, who are those two strangers?
Private dancer! Dancer for money! I'm Tina Turner, I am Supersonic!
Eddie?
Up the Tsar! Death to Lenin! Do the impression of Deputy Dog!
Eddie?
What is the difference between a rock band performing a concert upon the grave of Oscar Wilde and Terry Wogan's toupee? One is a gig on a wit.
Good report in the Mirror a couple of days ago about a religious leader in Nottingham, a Muslim religious leader who cut open an aubergine to find that the seeds inside spelled the word Allah. This is apparently true, you know, it's not very good. I cut a melon open the other day, it said, say yes to a paperback version of Satanic Verses. These are more get more seeds in them, you see. You know. It's nice to see the Ayatollah reincarnated as a purple vegetable, and what else could it have been? Last week, the Police Federation in Mid-Staffordshire actually held a demo, the police, about their change in their housing conditions. Now, I've never seen a police demonstration. I don't know, you could call it the thick blue line, I suppose. What do we want? What is it we want? I don't know. When do we want it? We'll come back to you on that one, I'm not sure. I suppose you've got to feel sorry for the police because they've been having all this terrible time on the poll tax demos and battling against what Mr. Kinnock called toy town revolutionaries. Again, I can't understand what he means by this. It conjures up an image of a steamy night in Camberwick Green where Mrs. Honeybun tells everybody they just set a rate of 499 pretend pounds, so they're all getting... Who's making the flower bombs? It's Windy Militant. My first brush with the law was in the 70s, when I was about 13. Me and my friends used to come out of the youth club, and the police used to stop us and search us a bit. And I remember my black friends, a lot of them, they used to confiscate their afro combs as a potential dangerous weapon. You must remember the 70s Sheffield comb wars, can't you remember that? All went on, get the afro combs out, we've got the little double-sided ones curd with hairs and dandruff in, you know. The women turn up with a Lady Brawn hand styler, huh? The police arrive with hairdryers. Okay, drop everybody. You know? Never happened, did it, you know? If anybody does get arrested in the next few weeks, make good use of your one phone call. You know what to do. Just say a message for David. Do Laughing Gnome. You've got to do that, really. And at least they're not going ahead with the football IDs. It seems to be shelved at the moment. So it should be, because when I was a kid, I used to collect football cards with pictures of the players and their names. So it should be, not the other way around, with the police collecting ones of you. Should have. Mick Talbot, Millwall, I got him 3 times. Swaps, anybody? Huh? Shouldn't be that, should it, you know? And here's a new scheme that's coming in soon, Drugs Command. Apparently, Drugs Command is a scheme that they're going to launch, which is encouraging us all to snitch on anyone that we know that takes drugs. But I wouldn't take cocaine because, well, basically, I've seen people on it and it turns you into a falsely enthusiastic person. I've seen people at parties. Basically, cocaine turns you into a game show host. That's what happens, basically. You've seen people at parties. Right, what's your name, Paul? How'd you do? Where'd you live? Lovely part of the world. Is that your partner? How long have you been together? Oh, thanks for coming. Enjoy the party. What's your name? David, how you doing? Huh? At least they did disband the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad just in time before, because if they had been round now when Mandela was released, they'd have been waiting to rearrest him on a minor motoring offence from 30 years ago. That would have been... I still can't believe that he's out, you know, because when I watched that Sunday, I thought, this is too good to be true. I thought, I know what it is. It's just an advert. That's what it is. All of a sudden, the camera's going to zoom in on two men in the crowd drinking lager, say, but he drinks Calling Black Label. Well, that's what it would be.
Hello, Terminal Deformity Clinic. It's just possible you can save my life.
Now, if there's been a discernible trend in music over the last 6 months, it seems to be that classical music is becoming trendy. Whether or not this is because modern pop is basically rubbish, we can't say, but classical records are shifting like never before, and Nigel Kennedy's Four Seasons is the first classical record ever to make the top five in the album chart. However, already there are disturbing signs that success in the pop world is likely to change the face of classical music. Already, the lead violinist of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra has been indicted for possession of cocaine and assault with a bow. Last week, the New York Philharmonic Orchestra split when the string section left, citing musical differences, to record an album of their own material. The virtuoso Japanese flautist Heiko Niada has been banned from being shown from the waist down on American TV after his suggestive pelvic gyrations during Mozart's Divertimento for flute. However, there has long been a crossover between the two styles of music. Some bands have long acknowledged their classical influences. In this previously unreleased track from Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd give their reading of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Also signs that the pop world is reading the writing on the wall and is trying to get in on the act. Next month, a new album will be released of Johann Sebastian Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, featuring the London Chamber Orchestra and Status Quo. Popular trend towards classical music continues, it could soon spread even further. Its influence might perhaps even bring a welcome touch of culture to the nation's football grounds.
Come on, you Spurs! 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 Spurs! Spurs!
So, will the trend spread? It might, of course, be that...
Come on, you Spurs!
No, really, we should have done this ages ago.
Look, Tom, we've noticed that you've been having some trouble with the garden of late. So you're sacked. Go on, piss off.
Giggles.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Wow! And now the Punchline Experience. This week's Punchline was, I have enjoyed the Mary Whitehouse Experience because, and we've rounded up the answers on bits of pink paper, and the winner will win a new XJS Jaguar. So, David, take it away.
I've enjoyed the Mary Whitehouse Experience because Pilkington knows how. And that's from Alistair Pilkington Knows How Dolling. Who's written, and oh, why didn't you broadcast the Punchline competition last week, you bastards? Well, mainly because you wrote most of it, I think.
I have enjoyed the Mary Whitehouse Experience because I'm profoundly deaf. But my radio looks nice. And Tim calls a PS no preferential treatment, even though Rob owes me a scotch. Well, you're not getting it now.
I've enjoyed the Mary Whitehouse Experience because I can masturbate in time to the theme tune. Well, now, Barry Benders, where are you?
We've got the theme music all queued up.
Hello?
And the cameras are in, actually, because they're actually from Roy Castle's Record Breakers. And the previous best was Status Quo's Digger and Down, and...
If I put a drum beat to it, I'm sure I can mix it into a great new single. That's from Jive Bunny. It's wacky, it's great, it's fab, it's on Hot FM, it's spondicious, it's packed with real talent, it's totally mega honest. And that's from the Al-Fayed brothers.
Yeah, David seems to have got all the ones from the ABC One social group, and I seem to get ones like this, because I got off with a girl next to me. And that's from Brad McGill.
This man!
He's back! He's back!
He's been the Salvation Army has been him on a rehabilitation programme. They've got him a suit.
Yeah, they've gone to...
Yes, thank you very much. And I was sorry I come here because I was pissed and I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed your company and everybody else.
Well, yeah, I enjoyed the last series of Cat Weasel as well.
So, Oh, dear, go and have a square meal, mate, for God's sake.
I know, and it's unlike you to make a spectacle of yourself, and I realise that that was a one-off aberration which would never happen again.
Cheers, mate.
Okay, cheers.
All and the best.
It's all the best to you, and I know that the garden's been getting a bit too much for you lately.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
In recent months, we've been hearing an awful lot about how Eastern Europe is becoming a democracy. Now, this is not going to be an easy process. This week, for example, there have been riots in, of all places, Transylvania.
Now, the Transylvanian riots pose a big problem for the Romanian government. Not only does the province want independence, but they also want Peter Cushing to return as their leader and demand that every town be filled with low-cleavaged women with NAF70s hairdos who wander about on their own at night for no good reason.
Now, the Romanian dilemma illustrates well the point that the change to democracy is not going to be easy. And why do we think that democracy is so brilliant anyway? What, in fact, do we mean by democracy?
Democracy is generally reckoned to be the best of a bad lot when it comes to running a society. Now, there are a number of different ways of organising government. Anarchy, democracy, presidency, monarchy, tyranny, and Italy. Let's look at these.
Now, let's start with anarchy. Now, anarchists face an insurmountable paradox. Whenever you see a poster for an anarchist demo, ask yourself this question. Who organised it?
Now, next, we come to presidency. American presidential elections tend to show up everything that's worst about democracies. The campaigning is entirely negative, the candidates are totally bland, since anyone who's ever done anything interesting isn't allowed to stand. And then the campaign managers reduce everything to the lowest common denominator. George Bush's campaign catchphrase was, "Read my lips, no new taxes," which, as an inventive slogan, is right up there with Taj Mahal Tandoori, 200 yards from this cinema.
Now, next we come to monarchy. Now, monarchy basically means that you get one family and then you let them run the country. Now, this is such an obviously rubbish idea that it's hard to believe that for hundreds of years Britain was governed in this way, until finally Oliver Cromwell realised how ridiculous it was and put a stop to it. Along the way, Britain had monarchs who were mad, stupid, ill, perverted, or just plain hopeless, and the population could do nothing about it. You never heard anyone say,
"Vote for Henry, your Tudor candidate."
What we have in Britain today is called a constitutional monarchy. In theory, the Queen has the right of veto over every new act of Parliament, but in practice, she never uses it. If she could, she surely would have said,
"This pill tax idea is complete bollocks."
Parliament also controls how much money the royal family get given on the civil list. This week in the budget, all the royals had their money increased.
Now, again, in theory, Parliament didn't have to do this. But if they hadn't, would the royals be able to go on strike?
There was uproar at Royal Ascot today when the Queen failed to turn up. The royal family are all taking industrial action in protest at their pay not rising with inflation.
What does one want?
12%.
When does one want it?
As soon as it's feasible.
The government, however, are determined not to cave in to the royal demands and are sending in the army to carry out royal duties.
Squad, name the ship.
I name the ship HMS Gregarious.
sir.
And today, Prince Edward turned up for work.
Skip! 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 Skip.
As this is the last show in the Mary Whitehouse experience, we thought we'd pay homage to her by examining perversion in the perversion experience. The vast variety of types of perversion demonstrate how ingenious human sexuality is. On a good day, it can find anything erotic.
And the producer said to me, Ronnie, he said,
oh,
as he does.
Yeah. Oh, I love it, look at that. It's so small, look at that. Look at his lemon V-neck jumper, cool, look at that. His Schlesinger sign right on the nipple. His nostrils, look at them, one of them's bigger than the other, lovely. Do the Swanee whistle in a minute, go on.
And Chief Umpopo said, that's what you look like if you don't eat your greens.
Oh, bloody hell.
Interestingly, classic British comedy affords an opportunity to display perversion in an acceptable frame. Morecambe and Wise used to go to bed together, for example, and they all dress up as women. Barry Humphreys, Benny Hill and Claire Rayner. This would suggest that real perverts could get away with it as long as they keep the gags coming.
Now then, ladies, cast your mind back to 1962. And a cow in Pontefract with a toad's arse. Who did it, I wonder?
The things we force him to do. This brings us on to the fact that certain perversions, such as sodomy, remain against the law. However, in terms of crime solving, they are more difficult to bring to public attention than most.
Now, Deptford High Street, 3 a.m. Did you see anybody shoving it up somebody else's arse? Thought not. Ah, well, keep them peeled.
Similarly with bestiality. It's not normally possible for the animal to report the crime, except in very unusual cases.
Officer Dibble, it was terrible. I knew I shouldn't go around wearing just a waistcoat. This thing's bound to happen, or it was awful.
Well, I'm sorry, PC. Next time I'll use some KY jelly.
Interestingly, KY jelly sounds like the name that, like, the mayor of New York City would have in Top Cat.
I liked it. Yeah. I liked that a lot. Beyond bestiality, there are also people who go to the zoo and get turned on by watching the animals mating. Now, certainly this is more cost-effective than going to any other type of sex show. I mean, at least while you're sitting there waiting for the gorillas to get randy, Johnny Morris doesn't come out and say, you've got to buy a drink now. It costs £5.
Now, obviously, we wouldn't want to throw any suspicion here on me and Rob, or alternatively, on people who make a living out of animal watching.
Here, on the plains of Burundi, we can see the male bison as it majestically raises itself onto the haunches of the female... Oh, I say. Meanwhile, over here, a male climbs onto the rear of another female bison, drops his safari shorts and shouts, put this on the cover of the new Radio Times.
Oh, I say.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
It's time for her to go.
Dear Director General of the so-called BBC, cancel your appointments, make yourself a cup of tea. Blackmail is a dirty word, but I know you'll understand when you've heard our very reasonable demand. 'Cause when we're through, I know that you'll agree with this simple list of things we'd like to see. Andy Crane and Henry Kelly flattened by a Renault 5. That's light entertainment. Sarah Green and Philip Schofield shot to death on Going Live. That's light entertainment. Show us all these things that people want to see the most. A new look children's BBC with Basil Brush as host. And Ed the Duck as pate served on thinly buttered toast. Or we'll send your children's earlobes in the post. Yes, we will. The basic thing we're trying to say here is make sure that we get another series. Make Selena Scott wear clothes that Wurzel Gummidge would not be seen dead in. That's light entertainment. Go up to Michael Barrymore, shout,
"All right!"
and kick his head in. That's light entertainment. Now we hope this threat will make you listen to our plea. Banana splits and wacky races back on the TV. Send Bruno Brooks to China, sell Steve Wright to BSB. Or we'll nail your daughter's hamster to a tree. Hey, thanks for listening. Yours sincerely. Hey, the Tracy Brothers. Thank you.
Okay, what are we finding first? The chatback line.
Right.
Yeah. What chatback line are you finding? Hello?
Hi. All calls are monitored and recorded for your protection.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's worth it. And the clock is working here. I have 24 hours and you listen to the team.
What's that?
If anybody is listening on here, I must complain about the tea bags.
Hello?
Myself,
look, stop talking about tea bags. Hello?
Oh, you
know, hello, Mrs. Tea Bags.
No, there's a tecklers, you know, little
tecklers. It's a Les Dawson sketch. Hello?
Hello, who's that?
Hello, we're people not from the north of England, so we have other things to talk about except tea bags.
What's your name then?
My name is Robert.
Who?
I'd like a cup of tea, if that's at all possible. Hello? Can I have a cup of tea?
What's your name?
David T.
David T?
Yeah. And I was interested in whether I could get a cup of tea off you, because I understand you make a lot of tea.
I make a lot of tea, yes.
So, yeah, so can you get me one here? I'm at the Paris Studios in Lower Regent Street, and I was wondering if you could get an express cup of tea down here.
Certainly.
Right. Well, I'll be waiting here until 1 o'clock in the morning, and,
Where is the Paris studio, by the way?
Paris.
In Paris.
Where are you?
I'm in Leeds.
You're in Leeds? Mm. We'll see.
Paris, vous français?
We're having a bit of a party here, in Paris.
Keep your noise
I understand
down.
You're having a party on the line.
Yes, but you couldn't keep your noise down, please, because nobody else will hear you. Here. So it's Tim, is it, or Tony?
Is it? All right, it's Tim and Tony. Tim, yeah. And Tony. Now, who are Tim?
Yes, I cook Italian, French, and English.
What's going on? I think we've got two to a pervy line. I think French and English means different types of tea.
Oh, yes, I love
a
experiment.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm like that.
I sort of learned some sort of basics, really, you
know,
from
chips. It's just 24
on there.
38p at peak hours.
How old are you, Tony?
I'm 29.
Josh?
How old are you?
23.
Oh, yeah?
Go on, pour tea over him, lick it off. Ah.
Depictions this.
Well, we've had a lot of laughs doing the Merry Watch of Experience, ladies and gentlemen. But what about those moments that didn't quite make it into the final version? Dennis.
We'd like to show you certain clips which weren't used in the final broadcast of the Mary Whitehouse experience so far.
Hold her fast as she goes, lay sails amidships.
Yes, the reason that bit wasn't used in the final broadcast of the Mary Whitehouse experience is that it was a clip from the Oneidin line. And now I've got to go and take this clipboard back to the foot of my hospital bed.
Thank you, Dennis. But what have been the funniest moments? Well, who can forget that wonderful moment from the very first series in 1948?
Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you a funny thing, I'll tell you a funny thing. Wolves have ears, ladies and gentlemen, wolves have ears. They put them in their sausages. Oh, yes, indeed.
What was that young man's name?
Arthur Esky.
You know,
one day that man's going to have both his legs amputated.
Oh. Oh. Well, at least there's some justice.
But then, of course, the biggest mistake we made, apart from that final joke, was not leaving enough time to write the final sketch of the final show. Good night. You've been listening to The Merry White House Experience. It was written and performed by David Beale, Rob Newman, Steve Hunt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Hurston, and the Tracy Brothers. The sound was by Martha Knight, and the producer was Armando Iannucci.